gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. And today I have as my guest for the hour, Andy Hitchcock from Great Britain. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Patrick. It's great to be on the show.
Thank you. Well, it's your first time on this show, so I want to introduce you. You have your own radio show in Britain. You're also an author. You've written a couple of books, and you've got a more recent article that we're going to be talking about. What are your books? And they're available through your website, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I've got two books. The first one is secular history. It's called The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored. So the first book, Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored. And the other book is In the Name of Yahweh, and that is a study of scripture. And that is, again, available from my website, andrewtarringtonhitchcock.com. But the book that I'm most known for is Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored, 144,000 words, and it goes right up until the end of 2011, and it talks about all the different Jewish infiltration into various wars, political systems, banking systems. It's got a 30-page index, so that should give you an idea of the scope that the book covers. And it's kind of what I've become best known for until I started doing my radio show in 2016.
Okay. And your website, how would people find your website?
It's andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com.
andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com.
That's correct.
And your radio show, what's it called?
It's just called The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, and it goes out on eurofolkradio.com. That's eurofolkradio.com every day of the year at 10 a.m. Eastern. And if you check back on my website an hour or two later, if you miss the broadcast, then you'll be able to download it from my website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com. And it's a new show every day of the year. I don't do repeats.
Wow. Okay. So, your recent article, what is your recent article?
It's not that recent. Let me go down to the bottom and find out. I mean, this got really, really popular and went all around the web. I actually put it together. I released it on the 1st of March 2015. So, we're coming up to 3 years old. But it's called Jewish Genocide of the White Race, Case Closed. And essentially, I wanted to prove, A, that this mass immigration that we're seeing into white nations is actually a genocide on its face, and B, that it was actually Jewish organisations that are behind it. And I start out by giving you the definition of genocide. And according to the Wikipedia page on the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, which was adopted by the United Nations General Assembly on 9th of December 1948, as General Assembly Resolution 260, Article 2 of the Convention defines genocide as any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnical, racial or religious group as such, and it's got the five here. A is killing members of the group. B is causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. C is deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. D is imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group, and E is forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. And I mean, certainly if we give an example of the rapes and killings in places like Sweden and Germany, well, I'd say that was A, killing members of the group. I would say that also causes serious, with the rapes, that causes serious bodily and mental harm to members of the group. And then deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Well, how about all these Jewish media organisations that encourage all the race mixing? And, that's designed to bring about the ethnical groups' physical destruction in whole or in part. And again, is imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group, mm-hmm. and forcibly transfers children of the group to another group, to a racially mixed group. And so when I saw that, I was astonished. And then you've got the Article 3, which is quite brief. It just defines the crimes that can be punished under the convention.
Okay, well, sticking with Article 2 for a second, because there are some other elements of this planned destruction of the white race, like the promotion of homosexuality and transgenderism, which very much prevents reproduction, right? And you've also got, feminism, to the extent that it is designed to prevent reproduction, and there's a case that I think it could be made for that. Some of the drugs that I think, like environmental hormones, all the estrogen they're putting into the system. There's more things that, and I suppose in your article, you probably go into some of the other things. You go into homosexuality at all?
No, because I kept it. I narrowed it down essentially. Mm-hmm. I concentrated on the legal aspect, because what we'll get into later is things like the Hart-Celler Act. And since then, I found out we have the same year, we have the Race Relations Act in the UK, 1965. Mm-hmm. And due to my show, I spoke to someone in Canada and someone in Australia, and they both had acts similar to Hart-Celler passed again. What year in Australia and Canada? 1965. Wow. So this was something that they ramped out over 50 years ago in a concerted effort to start this program off. And I think it started earlier. But, as I say, we can...
And so you go on to Article 3 now.
It defines the crimes that can be punished under the convention as A, genocide. So people who... groups that are responsible for, you know, bringing these people in, they should be prosecuted for genocide any time that one of these people kills a white person. B, conspiracy to commit genocide. Well, Barbara Lerner Spector, please stand up. C, direct and public incitement to commit genocide. Well, that's all the different groups, again, trying to get these people in, these so-called NGOs. D, even an attempt to commit genocide. And E, complicity in genocide. You know, it's all there for me, Patrick, that what they're doing should be being punished by the United Nations, but we know who's in control of that organization. Mm-hmm.
Well, what I've said in the past is you can certainly make this case for genocide. White genocide has become kind of a meme or a hashtag, and you can make this legal case for white genocide. Then the question becomes, well, when and where do you make it? And I think a place like this radio show is a good place to make it, your radio show, where you're talking to people who are already, for lack of a better term, red-pilled to an extent. I don't suggest making it to the broader population. I think I prefer a term replacement, replacing white people. Because most people, until you're familiar with this legal definition, most people, when they think of genocide, they think of, gas chambers and mass machine gunnings, which we don't see. From a purely legalistic standpoint, as it was defined and enshrined by the United Nations, this General Assembly Act Resolution 260, that, yeah, this does, I would make the case also, it meets the legal standard, the internationally adopted legal standard of genocide. What do you think of that? My reluctance to make the case to the as an introduction, right? It's not like it's not part of the introductory course to our problems, but it's like in the advanced course.
Well, I mean, I certainly see your point. My issue with the term white genocide is it's a bit like talking about the New World Order or the Illuminati. Well, who exactly are these people? And so if you say white genocide, well, who exactly are the people doing this? And that's why I use the longer term Jewish genocide of the white race, which, whilst controversial, if I could take you back to 1922, that convention was 1948, and this guy Richard Nikolaus von Coudenhove-Kalergi, who was a Mason and the president of the Pan-European Union, which was financed by the Jew Max Warburg, he wrote the following passages in his book, which is translated as Practical Idealism. The title is actually Practitia Idealismus, and I've probably pronounced that wrong. This is the statement. The man of the future will be a mongrel. Today's races and classes will disappear owing to the disappearing of space-time and prejudice. The Eurasian Negroid race of the future, similar in its outward appearance to the ancient Egyptians, will replace the diversity of peoples with a diversity of individuals. He goes on to say, what mainly separates the Jews from the average city dwellers is the fact that they are inbred people. Strength of character paired with sharpness of the mind predestinates the Jews in their most excellent specimen to become the leaders of urbane humanity. From the false to the genuine spiritual aristocrats to the protagonists of capitalism as well as of the revolution, the main representatives of the corrupt as well as the upright brain aristocracy of capitalism, journalism and the literate are Jews. The superiority of their spirit predestines them to become a main factor of the future nobility. And he goes on in his later autobiography. He says, at the beginning of 1924, we received a call from Baron Louis de Rothschild. One of his friends, Max Warburg from Hamburg, had read my book and wanted to get to know us. To my great surprise, Warburg spontaneously offered us 60,000 gold marks to tide the movement over for its first 3 years. Max Warburg, who was one of the most distinguished and wisest men that I've ever come into contact with, had a principle of financing these movements. He remained sincerely interested in Pan-Europe for his entire life. Max Warburg arranged my 1925 trip to the United States to introduce me to Paul Warburg and financier Bernard Baruch. And so we've got this Jewish-backed individual coming up and basically saying that wants to wipe out the white race of Europe and have them the resulted mixed mongrel race being lorded over by Jews. And I know you've done work yourself about how Jews are being promoted at places like Harvard and white people aren't being admitted in the numbers that they were in the past. And that, again, is part of this plan.
Right. So, and when we're talking about Paul Warburg or Bernard Baruch, we're talking about very, very major players. These were major Jewish bankers, so big-time money bags. And, you know, we know others like Jacob Schiff, another big-time banking money bag at the time. He was the a major financier of the Bolshevik Revolution. So these were big players, and it can't be taken lightly. Now, my feeling regarding this. I'm sorry. What his? I want to say Kargizi. What was it?
Coudenhove-Kalergi.
Kalergi is not so much that he's the originator of a plan that is being followed, but he is a reflection of Jewish thinking. I don't think, and he's not Jewish himself, right? He was half Austrian, half Japanese.
Yes, that's what it says on the Wikipedia page anyway, so I haven't seen any Jewish links to this individual.
Now, he could be. There was, during the Habsburg Empire, lots and lots of Jews were being ennobled. So he may well be part Japanese. I mean, part Jewish. I don't know. There were lots and lots of Jewish nobles in the Habsburg Empire. So that's certainly possible, but people will talk about the Kalergi plan, and you know you can say, well, okay, it was a plan. This is something or a proposal or a prediction. I don't. My contention, and this the same goes with the Steven Steinlight, who has also, you know, some people quote him. I've done a show with one of my listeners, where I guess we haven't done it yet. We've discussed it a lot. This Steinlight plan, and to me, it's not so much that these individuals came up with plans, and then this secret Jewish government said, "Oh yeah, let's enact that," and then they enact that plan, but that these are. To me, Jewish power is not particularly centralized, but there's just a lot of that Jews do talk to each other, even though it's not centralized, and they're not a monolith. Yet they do. There is a definable group behavior. There's a group behavior, and you can say this is Jewish group behavior. This is Jewish group actions, and this what Kalergi wrote was, to me, a reflection of Jewish thinking, and that Jewish thinking has remained relatively consistent, and you are seeing that Jewish thinking played out, and it's not necessarily a conscious following of what this Kalergi wrote out, but that Kalergi is, you know, this is a reflection of the Jewish thinking, and in the same way that the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion was a reflection of Jewish thinking, probably not even necessarily written by a Jew, but, you know, written by somebody else, but who was just channeling what he saw as being Jewish thinking. People often say that, oh, the protocols is a hoax, because it wasn't, you know, it was written by an agent of the Tsar. Well, let's say it was written by an agent of the Tsar. I don't know who wrote it, but whoever wrote it seemed to predict pretty well events of the 20th century, and I think was pretty tuned in to Jewish thinking, even if he was somebody who opposed it. Kalergi wasn't somebody who opposed it, but again, that's my feeling on it, that and so I think it's certainly worth studying, worth reading about, worth knowing about. I would be careful about saying, oh, they're following the Kalergi plan in situations where people are going to say, wow, that just sounds conspiratorial. But, you know, but to point to it and say, you know, Jews were talking about this, or Jews and their allies were talking about this very thing almost 100 years ago, and for instance, look at this, and you know, he spells out all this stuff, and you're seeing it played out today. This isn't an accident. I think it's certainly a very good, you could call it proof or evidence. It's very good evidence that this is something that Jews were thinking about, and I do think it is evidence of intentionality. I do think it's evidence that makes your case. The case that you're trying to make in the article.
Well, I think that the most important line in it is one that the listeners may have missed, because it was towards the end, and it's when he writes in the last paragraph that I quote, "Max Warburg, who was one of the most distinguished and wisest men that I've ever come into contact with, get this, folks, had a principle of financing these movements." And so it wasn't just the Kalergi plan, but it was any sort of movement that backed this racial mixing of white people being lauded over by a Jewish aristocracy. And so I always say to people that it's amazing what we have been able to find out that is information that has got out to us, but how much have they actually managed to cover up?
Yeah.
And I firmly believe that when we topple this power.
Yeah. And we'll have to do that when we come back from the break. We'll be right back.
corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
And welcome back to the show. I'm sorry I cut you off before the last break, but why don't you continue?
Well, thank you, Patrick. And I think the best thing to do is just very quickly, I'll give you my opinion that the World War One and World War Two were essentially getting white people to fight white people. Yes, I know that we had people like Japan in World War Two and what have you, but the real culling of the herd was the culling of white people. And what's very interesting is that in 1945, immediately after the end of World War II, the first wave of Afro-Caribbean immigrants arrived in Britain on the SS Empire Windrush. And this increased exponentially throughout the 1950s and 1960s. They claim that we needed these people because we had a labour shortage. Well, anyone with a basic grasp of economics would realise that employment is governed by supply and demand. Therefore, if you do not have enough workers in a particular sector, you offer a greater salary to attract them into it. And the fallacy that immigration was needed to fill jobs that British workers did not want to do is just an excuse, and it provides further evidence that the Second World War was simply a means of culling the whites in order to give the British government the opportunity to replace them with non-whites at the end of the war. And this, of course, was happening throughout Europe. Germany was getting a lot of Turkish people. France were getting a lot of Algerian people. Mm-hmm. We see the same argument today, don't we, Patrick, that we need all these Mexicans coming, these illegals in America, because they do jobs like gardening that white people won't do. Well, who did all the gardening before they arrived? You know, the fact is, we know who did it. It was white people. There are people at every level in white society that are prepared to do every sort of job, being, you know, on the basis that they get offered a wage that they can live on, that they can have their own property, that they can have a family, that they can have their vehicle for transportation. But what they're doing is they don't want to give you any of that. And the fact is, these days, when wages are going down and down, prices are going up and up. In the UK, the average salary is about £25,000 a year, and the average house price is about £250,000 a year. So that's 10 times the average salary. And so people are given no opportunity now, and then they're being pumped more and more full of immigrants, and the wages are going down. It's just amazing what goes on. And the other thing I just raise is that the British population have never been given the opportunity to vote on whether or not this immigration should have been allowed, even though it would lead to the largest racial transformation of society in Great Britain's history. There's a few people in the United States were awakened to this Jewish plot. And I've got a flyer here by the Christian Anti-Jewish Party of Atlanta, Georgia. And this is a flyer that they published. And it said, Jewish Life, official organ of the Jewish section of the Communist Party, in its June 1950 issue on page 8 states, our job as Jewish communists is to take the lead in educating the Jewish masses on the meaning of white supremacy and to enroll the Jewish community in an all-out fight against it. This is paramount in our work in the struggle for Negro rights. This is vital to the struggle of the Jewish people for their own security and future. It has surprised some people to find out that the president of the National Association for the Advancement of Coloured People is not a Negro, but the Jew Arthur Spingarn. It is the Jews who are leading the fight to destroy segregation in Atlanta schools. The NAACP is sponsoring suits all over the country and in the US Supreme Court to break down racial segregation and open up our white schools, restaurants, buses and hotels to Negroes. All important Jewish organisations are against segregation and have petitioned Congress for an anti-white FEPC law. A Jew, Julius Rosenwald, spent $30 million financing organisations and writers that promote mongrelisation. A race once mongrelised is mongrelised forever. America must awaken to the Jew attack against white people. And then it's got the address of their organisation. I've got a copy of this flyer in the article. So this is 1950, okay? And so again, we're talking 68 years ago. And we've got all these Jewish organisations trying to promote the desegregation of society in America. And they say that a mongrelised population is mongrelised forever. Well, it's absolutely correct, isn't it?
Well, right. You can't outbreed the genes, or to the extent you could, it would be selective breeding over many, many, many generations. It's not, no, that's not realistic. So Jews were they were at the forefront of this civil rights movement. And with the civil rights movement, you could make the case that it helped the most talented blacks, that they were able to break out of their own community and become very successful in the larger community. And you could also make the case that it helped some not so talented blacks, but blacks who were given a leg up by affirmative action.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines.
I know I've got you excited. So take a breath, head to aroutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at aroutfitting.com.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back to the show. And so you have in your article, you also talked a lot about the 1965 Immigration Act, this Hart-Celler Act. Hart being a senator from Michigan who was a goy, but really the force in the Senate was Jacob Javits, who was in the Republican Party. He was a Jew, a Republican Jew, but the Republicans were in the minority at that time, so the Democrat Hart wound up being the main sponsor, although there's lots and lots of co-sponsors. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the history of this 1965 Immigration Act?
Well, thank you, Patrick. And in 1965, we jump forward to there now, where in the USA, the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965 is passed. And the purpose of this law is to open the floodgates to African and Asian immigrants who were prevented entry under the previous national origins legislation, which restricted immigration on the basis of the existing racial demographic. And I'll give an example of the way national origins legislation worked. is say if in 1960 the American population consisted of 25% German Americans, then Germans could account for no more than 25% of the American immigration quota for that year, thus ensuring there would be no racial or cultural transformation of the country. So don't be fooled by the Jewish-controlled media talking heads of today telling you America is a nation of immigrants, when it was actually a nation of white immigrants who from 1607 all the way up to 1965 kept it that way. And as you say, fighting for the imposition of this act bestowed on the white American people is the Jewish Senator Jacob Javits, who wrote an article entitled Let's Open the Gates, promoting immigration levels of 500,000 a year for 20 years with no regard for national origin. And in the years prior to the passing of this act, several organisations lobbied the Senate subcommittee in support of open immigration. What were the names of these organisations? The American Jewish Congress, the Jewish Federation, the ACLU, the B'nai B'rit, etc., etc. This act was also known as the Hart-Celler Act, which is taken from the names of its sponsors, Congressman Emanuel Seller, who was Jewish, and Philip A. Hart, who you correctly identified as not being Jewish, but as you said, he worked closely with these groups, specifically one called the American Immigration and Citizenship Conference, in an effort to get this 1965 Act passed. And that conference included 12 Jewish groups alongside the heavily Jewish ACLU. And so, in other words, before this act was passed, immigration into the United States was almost exclusively white. Yet after its passing, immigration has become almost exclusively non-white. And this act was purely and simply communist legislation designed to destroy the Republic. And that's when I asked the readers to go back to the beginning of this article and read Article 2 and Article 3 of the United Nations Convention on Genocide and ask yourselves if the Jews behind the 1965 Immigration Act committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial or religious group.
Well, that's fascinating, and I've talked about this on the show before, and I've just been wandering around my studio looking for my copy of Eugene McCarthy, Senator Eugene McCarthy's book, America, A Colony of the World. I was hoping I'd be able to read a couple of segments from that, which I've read on the show before. Senator Eugene McCarthy was best known for his run in the 1968 Democratic primaries, where he effectively pushed incumbent President Johnson out of the race. And he wound up not winning the nomination because of the corrupt and violent Chicago Convention of 1968. That's what he's best known for. But he was a co-sponsor. There are many co-sponsors of this 1965 Immigration Act, and he was one of the co-sponsors in the Senate. And that's 1965. Well, you fast forward to 1991, and he writes this book, and America, A Colony of the World, and he has a chapter on the passage of this legislation. It was very interesting. It was a mea culpa. He's saying why he supported it and why he was wrong. It's very interesting. It's a case study in how these legislators were tricked, literally tricked by the Jews who were behind this. They were told explicitly, and you know, he brings in from the Senate record, he brings in the testimony of the Secretary of State, Dean Rusk, who seemed to be under the impression that this wasn't going to change the ethnic makeup of the United States. Attorney General Robert Kennedy, the brother of the slain President John F. Kennedy, who was saying, oh, it'll probably only amount to, you know, there might be about 5,000 Asians coming in the first year, and then not very many after that. The Secretary of Labor, they were, and yet there were still worries about it. And so they changed the legislation and came up with this family reunification clause, which says that basically 75% of the immigrant visas are going to go out to people who have family connections in the United States, who have close family connections. And this was sold to assuage the opposition, which was largely from Southern Democrats, who were the people who were currently embroiled in fighting the Jews over the civil rights movement. They were wound up being the only people who weren't convinced and didn't vote for the act. But the idea behind family reunification was, well, non-whites don't have close family ties in the United States. So how is a Somali, or how is a Cambodian, or how is a Nicaraguan going to immigrate to the United States? They don't have close relatives there. So this family reunification, who could benefit from it? You know, maybe Italians, maybe Poles, maybe Irish. If you have to have a close relative to sponsor you, well, then it's going to be white immigration. That was explicitly how it was sold. And what Senator McCarthy points out in the rest of the chapter is, no sooner had that passed than they started creating, well, he wasn't specifically saying the creation of the overseas crisis was for this purpose, but saying that these overseas crises in the Caribbean, in Cuba, in Indochina, in the Horn of Africa, in Central America, that these were being exploited to bring in refugees. And then once you planted the seeds of these refugees, they had plenty of close relatives back home that they could bring in. And you got this chain migration, and it wasn't coming from the people who had close relatives in the United States in 1965. This chain migration was started with these seeds planted by refugee populations, and of course they're coming from families that are many children, whereas the birth rates in Europe had been low, and they weren't big families, so they were bringing in all of these relatives, and that's what he points out. And I'm not sure, did you come across this in your research, whether it was specifically McCarthy's book or but that logic that in 1965 family reunification wasn't a threat, but once you had the refugees come in, this family reunification clause was effectively weaponized?
It's not something that I looked into for the article, because I just wanted to essentially prove that there was a conspiracy to destroy the white culture in white countries, and to essentially inevitably destroy the white race completely, and who was behind that. And I mean, in Great Britain, the same year, 1965, we get Jewish Home Secretary Frank Soskice passing into law the Race Relations Act, which incidentally was drafted by the Board of Deputies of British Jews, which leads to the Commission for Racial Equality, which leads to so-called hate laws, which were designed to prevent native white Britons from speaking out against the constant flood of immigration transforming the white nation their ancestors created into a nation devoid of national or racial identity. And I say, do you think the Jews behind these calculated moves in destroying the racial hegemony of both the United States and England were following any principles in this 1948 quote from David Petergorsky, the director of the American Jewish Congress, in which he stated, "Jewish survival can only take place within the framework of a progressive and expanding democratic society, which through its institutions and public policies gives expression to the concept of cultural pluralism." And then I bring up the Article 2 and 3 of the United Nations Convention on Genocide. Have the Jews behind the Race Relations Act committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial or religious group? I mean, it's just all over the place. And since I put this article together, there's been a guest on my show I've had from Canada, and a guest from my show I've had from Australia, and they both had similar acts to our one in the UK and your one in the America in 1965 passed to get non-white immigration into their country. So it's obviously a worldwide conspiracy against against white people. And in 2008, the European Council on Tolerance and Reconciliation held its inaugural meeting in Paris, where the co-chair, the former Jewish president of Poland, Alexander Kwasniewski, stated, "Integration will be one of our most important focuses, but both sides must participate in this process. The host country must learn to embrace multiculturalism." I mean, it just goes on and on. Then I've got a clip if you're interested.
Yeah, speaking of embracing multiculturalism and the Jewish role in it, let's hear this clip. Could you introduce a clip for us?
Yeah, this is Barbara Lerner Spector, folks. I think that a lot of listeners will be familiar with this individual. She's a Jewess who founded PIDEA, the European Institute for Jewish Studies in Sweden. Mm. And this was actually off Israeli TV, and it was not supposed to be broadcast to the Goys, of course. Mm. But it's on YouTube.
Okay, so it's for Israeli TV. It's for now. Yeah. She is an American Jew who made Aliyah and emigrated to Israel. And then after her conditioning in Israel, wound up being dispatched or moving on to Sweden, and is the leader of this, I guess it's a nonprofit, but it's got Swedish government funding. The guy who runs Red Ice Radio, who I believe is from Sweden, says that, yeah, it's actually a pretty important organization. So that's Barbara Lerner Spector, whom we're about to hear from.
Yeah, here we go.
As we heard, there are people in Sweden who support Israel and have a deep sense of the injustice of the present situation. It's these people who give hope to those who still believe that things will get better here. One of them is Barbara Spector, a former American who made Aliyah and then, 10 years ago, with the help of the government of Sweden, set up a non-denominational institute of Jewish learning with the Greek name of Paideia here in Stockholm. She believes the current wave of anti-Semitism in Sweden will pass and that Jews have an important role to play in a country undergoing profound change.
I think there's a resurgence of anti-Semitism because at this point in time, Europe has not yet learned how to be multicultural. And I think we're going to be part of the throes of that transformation, which must take place. Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies that they once were in the last century. Jews are going to be at the center of that. It's a huge transformation for Europe to make. They are now going into a multicultural mode. And Jews will be resented because of our leading role. But without that leading role and without that transformation, Europe will not survive.
And I take that last line, Europe will not survive, as a direct threat, folks.
It is very,
if we don't accept it, we'll be killed off anyway.
It's very, very odd, the idea that Europe, which has been the realm of Europeans for all of recorded history, that somehow it cannot survive now. Something's happened, and it cannot survive unless it brings in massive numbers of Africans and Middle Easterners and stops being the realm of Europeans. That's the only way for it to survive. And what does survival mean? If that's survival, it's survival for whom?
Well, exactly. And in 2014, Patrick, the Jewish deputy director for the Norwegian Center Against Racism, Irvin Cohn, one of those coincidences, states proudly that the Norwegian societies have a very short history with ethnic minorities at a scale, so there is a job to be done. Now, I've been to Norway, I've been to Sweden, and these are lovely countries that I went to a few years ago, and they were basically 100% white. Mm. And that is why Scandinavia was the last bastion of whiteness, and that's why they've gone after that on a massive scale. Because there were still some sanctuaries left. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, refer what Spectre and this Irving Cohn character just said. And go to this article, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, hover your mouse above the blog button on the menu bar, a drop-down box will appear, and you've got Jewish Genocide of the White Race Case Closed, and Jewish Genocide of the White Race Case Closed Part 2, which we'll try and get into. There's one particular comment that Netanyahu said about immigration, which completely goes against all these Jewish organizations saying what a good thing it is.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, you mentioned Sweden and Norway. You were there recently. Well, not too recently, but you were there not too long ago, and it was all white. I was there in the 1980s, and they were completely white. And, of course, now Sweden is... Hold on. And now Sweden is receiving more immigration per capita than any other country in Europe. And, you know, what's happened? Do you think that because they had so little experience with immigration, that they are vulnerable? They are like a, you know, like an isolated indigenous population that is suddenly confronted with bacteria and pathogens from overseas, and it has no resistance.
Well, I think I can best answer that by a little graphic that I include. Okay. I include a few
and
graphics in the article.
Could you answer that after the break?
Absolutely.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
And are back. You had a graphic that you wanted to answer my question with.
Yes, Patrick, it's just two pictures next to each other. The first one is when Tibet is full of Chinese, it's genocide. And the next picture, when white countries are full of non-whites, it's diversity. And what I'd like to do is, there's, as I say, encourage the audience to go to my website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, and go to the menu bar, hover your mouse over the blog button, and you'll see a drop-down list, Jewish Genocide of the White Race Case Closed, and Jewish Genocide of the White Race Case Closed, Part 2. And I want to read you this from Part 2, because this is very important. Bearing in mind, we've had all these Jewish organisations promoting non-white immigration, changing the laws to get non-whites into white countries. Now, contrast this Jews' open-door immigration policy in white nations with the following that they state with regard to immigration. This is from the Israeli Prime Minister's office website, dated June the 9th, 2015. Prime Minister Netanyahu: today we are starting to build the security fence along our eastern border in continuation of the security fences that we built along the Egyptian border. Of course, they will ultimately link up with the security fence we built on the Golan Heights. So, basically, we've got Jews in the UK, because that's what I addressed earlier in this article, pushing for more mass immigration. Their own Prime Minister is building security fences. I wonder why. Maybe his next comment in the aforementioned article on the Israeli Prime Minister's office website will tell us, and this is what he says. Today, we see what is happening to countries that have lost control of their borders. The combination of very brutal terrorism, labour migrants, smugglers, and the loss of control in the face of human tragedy that is taking place 360 degrees says that we must restore control and ensure Israel's control of its borders. And this is what we are doing. And I state, what does that tell the reader with regard to the motives behind Jewish support of immigration into white nations? Well, for me, and based upon the words of their Prime Minister Netanyahu, the Jewish purpose behind immigration is to, one, encourage terrorism in white nations, two, destroy the economies of white nations by flooding them with an excess of unwanted labour, three, increase crime in white nations, they define smuggling as one of them, and four, keep their fingers crossed that this results in a loss of control in white nations, which will inevitably conclude with the destruction of those nations. And that is the real purpose of Jewish-sponsored immigration, folks, to destroy the Jews' most hated enemy, the white race, while preventing their own country, Israel, from suffering the same fate. And if this is not Jewish genocide of the white race, case closed, I don't know what is. And Part 2 was written on May the 4th, 2016. So it was about a year or so after I wrote Part 1. It's a lot shorter, Patrick.
Case closed. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I think our listeners are probably, if they didn't jot down your information at the start of the show, they're going to want it now. Your website is?
AndrewCarringtonHitchcock.com.
And your books?
It's The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored, and In the Name of Yahweh. And if you scroll down on the right-hand column of my website, you've got pictures of the covers of both books. And if you click on those, it will take you to the details of the books.
Well, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, thank you for coming on the show. I hope I can have you on again sometime soon.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Patrick, for inviting me. I've enjoyed it very much.
Okay, and until tomorrow, stay tuned to RBN and look forward to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap, but did you know some companies take shortcuts? At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk.
That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldanysoap.com. That's oldanysoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldanysoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.